Welcome to another episode of the Humming Projector podcast. Today's guest has been on this podcast before, talking about BFCC, the British Film Collectors Convention. He's a director and producer working on documentaries like VHS Forever, VHS Forever Once Upon a Time in Camden, and Are They Hostile? But today we are going to talk about his latest book that has been published just 3 days prior to this recording. The book is called Bootlace Cinema and has the subtitle Collecting Horror, Science Fiction and Exploitation Movies on Super 8. I've had the pleasure of meeting him in person at Blackpool, and I am honored to once again have him here in this podcast. I am, of course, talking about Mark Williams. Welcome to this podcast, Mark.
Good evening, Elvin. Hope you're keeping well.
Yeah.
It's nice to catch up again. I think it was a couple of years, was it?
Yeah, it must be.
Wasn't last year, was it? Yeah, the time flies by, doesn't it, really?
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, thanks for having me back on the on your show.
It's good to have you back. And someone might remember that we had an episode with Vince Wright about his book on 8mm Elvis last year. For a small hobby like ours, it's a real treat when a new book about films and film collecting gets released. And so I am thrilled to talk to you about your new book today. But before we get to the book, tell me a little bit about yourself and your way into Super 8. How come did you get so interested in this media?
Well, it's all in the book, really. You have to buy the book. So, but I mean, basically, when I was at school, my father, I must have seen an advert in a magazine. That's what it was. It was a horror magazine. And there was this really cheap Italian projector and like six sort of horror movies. You know, you could get a little 50-foot reels, you know, very short. Little snippet. So I said to my father, I said, oh, look, you know, this is before, you know, PayPal and everything like that. You know, you physically have to send a check to the company. And it was Mail Master Films, and the advert's actually in the book as well. So we tracked that down. So I was really, really pleased with that. I got my father to do that, put it in the post. This is back in the 70s, you know, everything's slow. And he might have even sent a postal order. He could have well, which you had to go down to pay cash at the post office. They'll give you a postal order and then you could put it in like a check and send it that way. This is really in the, going back, you know, mid-70s really, you know. And I waited. And it must have been like 6 months before this parcel arrived. I've probably forgotten all about it really on there. So, you know, as a kid, I got opened it up and it's really cheap. Can't even remember the model of the projector. If you look at the book, it'll tell you exactly for any sort of technical enthusiasts out there. Opened it up and these six reels of film were in the shrink wraps. They turned out to be like Charlie Chaplin cartoons and a couple of cartoons as well, you know. So, a couple of Charlie Chaplin. No horror, and of course, it waits so long, and, once you get to know Mail Master Films, they're a little bit dodgy, that was that really on there, but I was happy, and they gave you like a little A4 screen as well in there, so you got they called it a preview screen, so, I was great, so I had this projector, no screen or anything, so I put it on the floor, put it against some books, and then showed these, and I loved it. You know, this is, you know, these are black and white silent movies. Very probably a clip from Easy Street or something, Charlie Chaplin, and I absolutely loved it. And I ran it to bits. You know, ran this projector down to the ground on there. You know, but it's all in the book, and probably in better detail than I've just explained. But yeah, that's what started me off. Then, if I can sort of allow it, then Star Wars came along. And, you know, in Britain, it was crazy because 20th Century Fox, it'd been a massive hit in the summer, probably about 1977, something like that. But Fox decided not to release it here until the following year. So it was crazy. So probably had to wait 6 months for Star Wars to cross the Atlantic. But in the meantime, where Mountain Films or Mail Master Films were importing a 200-foot version of Star Wars, so it's a little clip. It was great, you know, the little bit of battle scenes and things like that, you know. And they're importing it, so yeah. And then they decided to do a 400-foot version, which is great. So it's like a nice 16, 17 minutes. And my dad bought me, I was really lucky, you know, one Christmas. And they were very expensive. He bought me a sound projector, and also this 400-foot Star Wars, and I probably had a, I think I had a, like a Mighty Mouse cartoon or something, but they were beautiful because they're American prints. They were far better than what we had over here. I mean, Castle Films are very good quality. Mail Master or Mountain Films, no, you know, some of the stuff was very, very hit and miss. So, yeah, I was a lucky boy, really, and they weren't cheap. You know, probably like £162. I don't know what that equates to these days. Yeah, I was hooked.
and it stuck all the way until today, or did you have a break during the sad 80s?
Bro, I've had lots of. I probably sold up more times than anybody, really, you know, because well, I think especially, you know, as you get in your sort of teenage years, you go out and, you know, especially back in the day, you know, you go out to discos and clubs and things, and you meet lots of females and things. So, yeah, you know, it was all sort of put on hiatus, really, on there. I think I still kept a few bits and pieces, and I probably kept an Elmo projector, but I probably didn't start probably collecting until after I got married, probably about 1987, a couple of years after I got married. Just found some films at a Westminster Film Fair, and yeah, you get the bug again. You probably know the feeling. Mm.
Yes, I came late to the party as I was born in 77, so I bought my first cartoons maybe when I was 13 or something like that. So I haven't either been there all the way, but you have covered most of the time, it seems.
Yeah, but it's a very, you know, for a kid growing up, it's very exciting, especially when you're at school. Yeah. And, you know, even getting like 200-foot, you know, digest of something. And these Castle Films were great quality. I mean, they were very good. I think some of those were imported. So, you know, you get Dracula and Tarantula and all the great Universal horrors were available. And that we were just quite happy to sit with my friends and we watched all these 200-foot extracts. You know, Curse of the Crimson also was another one. And you could go down the, this is a great thing, Elvin, sort of locally where I lived, there was I got the chance to work. I was working on Saturdays at the film shop, so that was perfect for me. So I just sort of sat there, you know, and just sort of running films all day. So that was great. And we also had, you know, like the photographic shops in town. So you go to the, you know, go to a big town and you go to Dixon's or another, you know, you could get the Castle or, you know, the Walton, you know, the 400 foots, which were great. And we progressed to colour sound, and that was that, really. And, you know, and found Perry's movies in Wimbledon. So, yeah, very exciting time.
Yeah, and this interest has built up until today that you actually decided to write a book about it. So I...
it's always been in the back of my mind. And it's just been... This has been a nightmare. I mean, I'll probably do films, you know, a lot easier than I would have done the book. But, yeah, it was around the time I did the first... my first documentary film, VHS Forever, Psychotronic People, which went really well. You know, we had some great, we had a proper London premiere and we showed it quite a few times. We're having the 10th anniversary screening coming up in the West End on the, I think it was the 9th of November as well, at World Wild Weird. So that'll be good to get back and get some of the crew back. But that was great, labour of love. So I thought about it then and... you know, I went to various publishers and we just didn't get anywhere. Then I'd sort of teamed up with Mark Banville because Mark Banville does the Cave of Cult, very good website. And he'd had a book out called Theme 70. So I've all these, very much fanzine based, so that had come out. And he was in my film. So we interviewed him. It was fantastic. It's really, and he loves all his, you know, kung fu exploitation stuff, you know, that type of thing. And we were going to do the book together originally, you know, on there. And we sort of got some writing together. We even got a book deal with an American company. This is going way, way back. This is back to 2015, 2016. It's probably back to 2015. And they didn't know what to do with the book. I won't mention the name for obvious reason, but a big American company. One of these things where people have ideas and they park a lot of ideas there. So you'd send in your manuscript. Oh, yeah, we like that. We're going to work with you on that. We never got put, and they were having surveys saying, oh, we're actually not going to be able to sell any books because, you know, Super 8 is such a niche market. And it, you know, they're right in a way, you know, it's not going to, you know, I'm not going to be able to take the United States by storm or anywhere else. But it sort of proved it wrong because, you know, today the book's gone into the top three bestsellers on the category of horror science fiction on Amazon. So it's which I'm amazed. And we've had so many people come out who you know wouldn't necessarily buy a book on Super 8, but I think we're sort of targeting it for that audience. And it's a nostalgia thing. They love to see, you know, some of the old artwork. And where do you see it? Unless you're like us, we're like detectives, aren't we? We'll, you know, like the database, you'll look at stuff. And I must say, without the Super 8 database, it would be, you know, we wouldn't have a book. You know, you've been very lucky. You've got some great scans there, you know.
Well,
Jed Jones, the old MD of Deran, I sent him a PDF preview, and he absolutely loved it. You know, he said, I can't believe it. You know, it's
I'm not surprised though that it sold really well on the first day, because there are not many books about Super 8. So when you see someone really have worked on something and made something really well,
And people have been they waited 10 years for this, and it, you know, like it's a bit of a hype, all 10 years in the making. This is true, this is you know, it's literally taken. You know, and I've probably been to Blackpool, and it's the book's been dead in the water. And the problem is in Britain as well, if you haven't got the only way to do it is a full-time thing. If you're looking for a publisher, you need to have a lot of time, and you need to get an agent. And then they won't even look at I think they call it a third-party submission or something like that. They won't even look at a private person. They won't have to go through the agent, and it's very sort of constructed there. You know, I just have time to do it. I mean, I might have done it. Have time to do it when I retire, but not now. So you know, I sort of I knew a guy called Steve Kirkham who was originally he was interested in VHS Forever. We met up 10 years ago, and he does a great sort of, you know, a publishing company called Tree Frog Communication. I have to get that right. And he approached me, said, "Look, you know, well, let's get together and do the book." And he's brilliant. You know, the way he does the layout and the typeset, and he's designed the cover. It's and he also done books where he's gone direct to Amazon as well, which you know, the revelation. It's crazy because the book went live on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah,
and people are holding the physical copy of the hardback book yesterday afternoon. I mean, that's fantastic turnaround, isn't it? I mean, it's just.
Yeah, I saw that. It was hard to believe, even that I could get it so quick.
And we can't ship anywhere. You managed to get your copy, did you, as well?
Yes, I tried right away on Saturday to order it, but I wasn't able to.
Yeah.
But then suddenly today, I was from the Amazon US, so they have opened up something there, I guess.
Yeah. It's a strange beast as well, because I had a colleague of mine, you probably know Clinton Hunt from the collecting groups and the forums, but he ordered a copy from is in New Zealand, so he managed to order a copy. And I had another gentleman as well, I think it was Tony Lewis, that he was in Australia, and he said, I can't order it. I said, well, no, have a go now, because go on to amazon.com, so I'm plugging away here, and you can order it. And I think he ordered it. He didn't come back to me, so and it's great for a book, because it's not just, I think before when I was doing films and that, they're very sort of, you know, the UK, or, you know, we were very successful. We shipped a lot of VHS to Norway as well. There was a big interest still. It's great, you know, and America as well. That it did very, very well there. But other than that, you know, but this book is massive. It's like worldwide. We'll open up to different markets, probably like Japan and, you know, other markets as well later on, you know, and also do a, you know, obviously a download copy of the book as well. So, but the book's lovely. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it looks really good. I, as you can hear from this conversation, I haven't had a physical copy, but I has been lucky to have a PDF so I could look through it before this. I read most of it, of course, before this interview, and it looks really, really good.
It's better than nothing, you know, and I just want to get it out there. And in more time, we'd have time to send out, you know, review copies and things. But
I felt really professional when I got the preview PDF, so thank you for that.
And we've got sample pages and, you know, and all sorts of banners and all sorts of things, you know. So you've got to, you know, this is probably, you know, out of my remit, because Steve does this all day. He does a lot of work for We Belong Dead, which is a very good magazine here, very sort of horror, vintage horror related, run by Eric McNaughton, I should say there. Yes, that was great. And I've done a lot of writing for them before, you know, obviously just short film reviews and things. And he makes me look good. So I thought, oh, yeah, great. You know, if we go down this this avenue, it'll it'll probably work, you know. But I'm very proud, like a proud parent today with it, you know.
Looks good. He's showing it to me now on the video. It looks really good. I can't wait to get my copy. To the title is called Bootleg Cinema, and maybe that's a really common term in the UK. I'm not a British, as everybody can hear, that was a new term to me. I understand what it means, but is that a common expression in the UK?
Well, it was. I mean, this is, because I wanted the book to be very retro and things, so hence we've got the old-fashioned X certificate on there, adults only. Now, this title comes back. There was a very popular sort of magazine which ran for years called Movie Maker. And one of the columnists there was a guy called Bill Davison. He did a little column. And before him, it was a great writer called Dennis Gifford, who's sadly no longer with us. But he did the column. So it was back in the probably 60s, 70s, something like that. So, yeah, the Bootleg Cinema was just because it's that little strip of Super 8, you know, like a bootlace, really, compared with 16mm or, you know. So it was just a homage to that, really, you know. And Bill actually turned up at Blackpool a couple of years back, I believe, as well. So he's still alive and kicking, which is... But they were great. And, you know, as a kid, Movie Maker was where it's at, because I wouldn't have known about Deram. I was probably looking at a copy in... We used to have a big news... Well, it's still there. It's called W.H. Smith's. So you can go and browse, you know, if you're... if you're not pulled away or something, so you have a look at it. And I looked at, is there, man? Look, they're putting these Hammer films out. We couldn't believe it. So I probably saved some pocket money up and went and bought a copy. And once you buy one copy, you're hooked, because you want to see what the... It was that exciting, because you probably have about 10 different releases a month. You know, you'd have big companies, 20th Century Fox, Disney, releasing stuff back in the day, you know, later on Paramount. It was just absolutely fantastic, you know. So it was quite exciting. So you save all these lovely adverts, which we've reproduced in the book as well.
Yeah,
so,
I like that.
But that's how Bill... So it's not probably in the UK. Bootleg Cinema would have been, if you're in the collecting scene, you're probably in the know. But I thought, I don't want to put a book out that spills everything out. It's got a bit of mystery, isn't it? People say, what's this? That's why we put the subheading collecting horror, science fiction, and exploitation movies on Super 8. And most people haven't seen these, so it's...
It's a distinctive title, for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, you first of all, you've got to love this lovely colour cover here as well. It sort of draws you all these beautiful covers. Lots of German covers on there. And people were saying to me, I never knew... You know, like Maneater was available on Super 8. Yeah, you know, there's a story there about it being banned on Super 8. This was before video, you know, banned on Super 8 in Germany because they were very strict.
How did you choose your genres? It's about exploitation movies, horror and science fiction. How did you choose those as the subject for the book?
Well, it sort of evolved, because what I want to do, I sort of plan this book out. I'm only ever going to put one book out on Super 8, so because I was only expecting to sell two copies or something. So I thought, well, let's put all the best covers, the covers I loved as a kid, you know, like Razor, Lost Ark, Young Frankenstein. Let's put them all in the book, and that was that. I thought I took the best covers and put them in the book. And it was simple as that. And there's other films I really like, but the covers weren't great. So, but you have to, we'll probably put them in volume two, hopefully. So, you know.
And it's, I like that, a book with a lot of covers, because it's perhaps a book that you would like to just browse through and pick up back again. And every time you sit down with a cup of coffee, you can browse through it again. And look here and there, a real coffee book. I like that.
This is my greatest hits. We weren't like one of these really big, publishers who could do, was it Tashkin or something, do these books for £700 and things. We thought, no, you know, we've got to do it on a budget as well, you know. So I could have done it big. I would have liked to have done full size covers and like coffee table size thing, full size posters in it, you know. But I wanted to make the book affordable, everybody can buy. And I believe Amazon are actually doing a 19% discount on it now as well. So it's, because it's hit the top three.
Nice.
They're, I'm quite proud beating Tim Burton as well. You know, I thought they'll never, you know, but we got beaten by buy a new book, the 1897 edition of Dracula by Bram Stoker. So,
yeah. You must screenshot that.
and Star Wars. But, you know, the great thing about, and this is another thing, I mean, with the book, and I thought, I love the Star Wars covers. So I thought, well, if I put those in the book, then you've got another fan base, haven't you? You know, the Star Wars fans are going to be interested, aren't they? We've got the horror, we've got the video nasties. Mm. You know, they're going to be interested, aren't they? The VHS fans. So, yeah, I've tried to make it. It's my greatest hits, basically, on there. You know, so trying to make it, you know, as interesting. And there's loads, thousand more covers, you know.
And it's made alphabetically, so you can, if you look for one particular film you know you've seen in the book, you will be
able
to
find it. We're quite organized. Quite well. I mean, yeah. And this is a bug bit. I do like a, you know, especially doing a lot of writing, I love to, you know, if I've got to write up on something. Or the Blood Beast Terror or something, you know, I don't want to be going through a book all over the place in big volumes of things. I've got a lot of books from the 70s and things, you know, Dennis Gifford and people like that. This is imperative. Put it at the front as well. So you've got the, I want to read about that, you know, and you can take your best and find your films. And I thought put it at the back as opposed to the back, put it at the front is far better, I think, really, you know. It's an easy reading, I should think.
Probably. Yeah, well, that's good. I like those books because often these times, at least for me, the time that I have for reading books are quite divided. So an hour here and half an hour there. So have a book that you can browse through and read a couple of pages, three pages, four pages, and then enjoy that.
And I've tried to, you know, I haven't sort of, probably the film I went on, probably the more detail than ever, and probably it's got, had a few releases, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So I thought, well, no, that's an interesting history, and probably the big fans of, there's a big fan base still, you know, of the movies. So, that's quite interesting. So we had to make sure we got the facts right, and we were going backwards and forwards with Adrian Winchester as well, because I was sure there was a double album, either version 2x400, like 600 foot. But I said, no, you can't put that, you know. We've never seen any proof, and I've asked other collectors. So it's just speculation, really, isn't it, you know?
Yeah. Who is the intended audience for this? Is it the seasoned collector, or is it people that might remember Super 8 back in the day, or is it both? Who have you been thinking most about when you have read
the book? You know, I think, again, you know, it's attracting a more general audience. Mm. So I think, you know, you've got your fans of horror movies and things. They want to see the artwork and, you know, and they've probably never seen it. And then you've got, the dedicated collector. So, I mean, I've done, for the dedicated, you know, I put, like an article, Lee approached me about his Cinemari miniature, and I said, well, yeah, you know, send me some, because Lee's going to launch that on Super 8 next year, I believe. So I said, well, send that to me, we'll put it in the book, because I thought that, you know, that's going to appeal to the, you know, to the season collector. And also, you know, we were very lucky, Keith Wilton wrote a lovely article, Cut and Cut Again. And this before he became unwell, and he done a lovely job. So here, you can find out exactly what, you know, what he edited, and you know, I never knew.
I love that. I really, really
love
that.
I know, and I thought, well, that, you know, it might not resonate with somebody who's not familiar with Super 8, but I wanted to put stuff in here that, you know, the true collector would like, you know. It's like my Super 8 Mania article, probably say, oh yeah, you know, I did that as well, you know.
I didn't know that he had done that much work editing, so I really like that.
Well, it's a revelation. And, you know, the first time I knew, probably about when we did about 10 years ago, we did a BFCC back in Ealing. And then he showed a 400 foot of Kingdom of the Spiders and the Mummy's Shroud. And I said, these are great. And he said, I edited those, and we never knew. So I said, well, look, you can have to put it in. And, you know, to get that done as well, he had disaster after he had, you know, flooded basements. He had an old computer which kept breaking down. He had to get it fixed. But we got there, and I thought, this is fantastic. And, you know, this before he became unwell, and he, you know, has memory problems, unfortunately. To get this in writing, it's just gold dust for the collector, you know. Absolutely. So I think it's a, you know, something, you know, for the casual viewer, yeah, it's great. You know, you've got the popular films, you've got, you know, Star Wars, Buck Rogers, Gremlins and things like that. But then, you know, you've got the horror, you know, the real Hammer horror. You've got lovely stuff like Hands of the Ripper in there, and And we got little potted history of some of the distributors, like Pale Films. It's a very brief, probably say, I could have gone 200 more pages if I wanted to, but I thought, I don't want to alienate an audience, I want it for everybody.
Yeah.
Either way, there's a lot of magazine. I thought, you're going to put out your best magazine you ever want to do, a special, or this is the way to do it. So, yeah. A little bit self-indulgent, I suppose.
And you have been written a little piece for every film you list there in this book. How was that work? You must have been watching a lot of film and doing some background research.
I'm very lucky. I've got a very good memory, and I worked in the film industry back in the late 70s. Now Paramount Pictures, and seen a lot of films. So a lot of sometimes, yeah. But I mean, it's a little bit different because if I'm writing for Eric, for example, sort of an in-depth article or something like on Blood for Dracula or something, I've got to sit down and watch that. And then, he's probably had about five or six different reviews, so you've got to sit down and pick something out that's a little bit different and, use that. And especially if there's a Super 8 version up, that's great. They don't know that, the general audience wouldn't know that, would they, on there. That's why they're saying, we can't believe it, Man Eater, there was a longer version of Phantasm, available.
I like that, the small details where you add more information than
it's in the detail. Yeah. I've tried to be factual. I mean, I was sweating it because when I said to Jed, I thought, I hope I've got the Deran story right. I mean, I can't possibly write about everything, but, I think I got it right. Yeah, and he said, it's great. You've covered all the main, and that closing day was the saddest day ever. I went down there. And me and my late friend Tony Duggan, you might remember Big Tony from the fairs. He used to be a regular at Blackpool. Yeah. And but that was a sad day, And seeing everything was in the skip, not good.
No.
Not good at all.
And having all the facts right, I can really understand how anxious you have been to get this right, because I'm always trying to do my best in the database, but I can always get back correcting it straight away if I find something, but in a written book it's worse. So hats off for all the work you have done.
With this, it's a lot of reading, and a lot of proof checking and spell checking and things. But I think it worked, and I try to be as accurate as possible. That's why going back to the text change, I'm going to go back to Adrian, and he said, you should put the, but I don't, I'd hate to create something that's not out there, because I think, probably like you, it's the fun of the chase, thrill of the chase.
Yeah.
If you like, it's lovely to go for all these reels of old film there, and you might pick up a great reel, which certainly happened to me. And even going back, collecting again, 20 years ago, I mean, it was, again, back then, eBay was cheap. You could pick up a 400 foot for £2 or something, on there.
Can I ask you what your favourite film in the book is? Do you have a clear favourite?
I wish I'd never asked that one, really. I love them all. I love them all,
But, like choosing the favourite child.
it is. But, looking, one of my personal favourites, I love that. There I am back in that 1979. They put out the 400 foot of Phantasm, which I absolutely love. And the film you watch the whole film, it didn't make any sense. And the Deran 400 foot didn't make any sense, but it was probably the perfect, but it had all the great scenes in there, all the great gore scenes, quite a nice print back in the time, but it's perfect for a digest, you're cutting it down to 70 minutes or so. And so it was funny, I was back in there, so I got my father to take me up to Blackpool in 1979, first time ever. And we had a great weekend in 1979, and we went to the Deran. And he bought me the 400 foot of Phantasm, and also I think I got Elvis the movie. I was very lucky again. And I got the free by 400 foot of Wild Geese, which is another favourite of mine. Roger Moore in it, and Richard Harris, Richard Burton. And they did the great version of that. So it was expensive for my father there, We had a great. I think I bought some second hand films. I remember getting the Massacre trailer reel with Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Blood Feast, 2000 Maniacs on it, and all these films hadn't been seen in the UK. They were, the censor had banned them or refused to look at them. So getting a little trailer, was fantastic there. But happy memories. I've been going that long, 1979, when I was a lad, really. And all of them were going to see, I think they didn't have anything on a Saturday night. Not like they have the lovely dinner Adrian Winchester organises these days. I think I went to see Alien at the old, they used to have the lovely Odeon cinema there with the tower. The tower's still there. Yeah, and I saw Alien there, you know, so that was the first time, first time I sat there. Well, no, I'd seen it because I've been to the premiere. And I was really lucky because I got tickets for the premiere when I worked in the film industry. So I saw it with Ridley Scott back in the day. Oh, but wow. There we go.
That's something.
I was quite impressed because it was 70 mil, six-track stereo, you know, so it was quite an event, really, you know.
The amount of work you put into this book has been huge, I'm sure. And so there must be a few challenges on the way to get this book finished. What tip would you have given yourself if you could go back in time before you started writing this book? Is there anything that you would have done differently if you have started today?
Yeah, I would have probably got a better laptop, I think, there, you know.
And did you learn something about films when you worked with this, as you must have been going through the films more thoroughly than you normally would have?
Well, you know, just that we probably tend to have a few regular shows and, you know, I'm just lucky, I'm blessed with a good memory. Hmm. So I think if you said to me, what'd they have in the Alien, you know, Ken films, 20th Century Fox 400 foot version, I could probably tell you. If you want to test me, that's fine. But... I just from memory, really, on there, you know, it's, you know, some are better than others, aren't they? You know, I'm sort of surrounded in the office by 8 mil. And, it's still nice to go in and do, you know, we should do some shows in London, you know, at the West End. It's only above a pub, but it's nice to get people, and they come and see, oh, we didn't know there were, you know, we did short versions of films. And, you know, and I used to do them back at school as well. I mean, back in the day, I'd probably design the poster myself, so I'd have in the... I couldn't believe it. We'd have Star Wars, we'd have Close Encounters, we'd have Jaws or something like that, you know, all on the one. And they said, oh, wait, how'd you do that? You know, but, you know, literally, they're out like an hour's worth or something, you know. So, yeah, people couldn't believe it. You know, we put a massive screen on there as well. So, I started at school. Mm. I mean, you know, my headmaster used to encourage me to do the film... do the film club, and we got banned a couple of times with the films on the show. But bless him, he just passed away. Michael Realm was my old headmaster in Croydon, and he was great. He was very sort of progressive. He'd come on, and I wasn't the best behaved pupil at school either, so he'd encourage me, and he said, but the one day I think we showed it was crazy. I think we were going to show Confessions of a Driving Instructor, probably a little bit too much for the school kids. And of course everybody was paying in advance, and I'd done the poster. And I think he was going to show it, actually. He was going to go, you know, because it was just laughable, a bit of nudity in there. He was going to go with it, but one of the lady teats complained, probably fair enough. I mean, I totally understand, but so we had to pull it. But the following week we put a video nasty on. I think it was, oh my gosh, what was the name of this? It's in the book anyway, you know, Knights of the Bloody Apes. Mm. The name nearly escaped me. And it was a Deran release. And we borrowed it from Perry's Movies Library for the week. So I used to borrow them for 7 days. So we thought, oh, we'll put that on. And it wasn't nasty at the time because this is before VHS came in or Betamax. Mm. And we had a full house for that one, and we didn't get any objections, so I thought that was good. And the film was terrible. Actually, it was a Mexican movie made in the 70s by a guy called Rennie Cardona Jr. And it, you've got to see it. Have you ever seen it? It's terrible. It really is terrible. But, it was heavily cut anyway by the censors here. But just to jazz it up, they decided to put real sort of heart transplant footage in the, you know, in this operation scene, which was great, you know. Now, the censor cut all the silly, and it was very, very bad gore in it. Bad, you know, actors used to have their, you know, their sort of, you know, their tops ripped open, then they'd be running, then the top would come back on again, and, you know, there's no continuity there at all. And we probably showed, I think we showed a Hands of the Ripper, I think I showed as well. More traditional, because you could see back in the UK, you could see them uncut on television. Mm. So it wasn't, you know, most of the kids stayed up late tonight anyway, and they probably put them on they'd put it on about 10:30 or something, you know. So it was great, and it was quite good because all the taking, I think you charged them £1 each, a lot of money those days.
Yeah.
And I think we put it in, and we made a tribute film called Return of the Incredible Melting Man on Super 8, you know. So and I had to apply, we couldn't afford rubber or anything, so I had to apply dough and then put sort of blood red colouring, food colouring, which was great until he got home and it was seeped through, so his face was sort of red. His mother wasn't happy. You know, we were only, you know, like 15, 16-year-old. Probably, we could have been 14, you know, even. But that was the end of that, really. It's a lost film. I mean, we've never, I don't know what ever happened to it.
Too bad.
And I did do a Saturday Night Fever pastiche as well, so we had somebody in a white suit going down the road. We couldn't afford white paint, and you know, remember at the beginning with his white, you know, he's got the paint and we had this, we had used milk and it was slopping it all over the place, making a hell of a mess, you know, on there. But yeah, I've still got that one, I think. There, I'll show it at Blackpool, won't you?
Well, we are getting towards the end now.
Yeah. Oh, I might want to add this as well. I know, obviously, I'm doing in the UK, I'm doing a little bit of a mini book tour. So we'll start off the BFCC on Sunday the 29th of September. So and that's in central St Albans. So you can, it's right by St Albans City Station. So I'll obviously be taking along books there, you know, yeah, to sell. And, you know, and if anybody wants a signed copy, that's fine. I'll do it free of charge. And we've got another Super 8 show on Saturday the 9th of November in the West End with Worldwide Weird. So we're going to actually show some Super 8 films there. So that should be pretty good. There's some interesting selections. We're also doing the 10th anniversary screening on, not on VHS, sadly, but on a DVD copy of my film, VHS Forever. So it'll still look nice and grungy, really. And then I'll be with Elvin on the 15th to the 17th of November at Blackpool. I'm really looking forward to that because it's such a gathering, isn't it? I mean, all over the world, you know, it's
I'll it's really incredible, look forward to meet it? You then again there in Blackpool. And the Blackpool Convention is the 15th to the 17th of November 2024 at the Grand Hotel in Blackpool. And the only thing you need to book for in advance is the dinner if you choose to go to the dinner on Saturday. So I really look forward to meet you again there, Mark. But before that, we have the BFCC. Could you say something about when that, you mentioned that briefly, but can you mention that again when that is?
Yeah, it's a new venue for us. Sarah at Talking Pictures approached me, and then I approached John and said she's found a lovely venue for us. It's lovely. It's called the Country Club. It's in central St Albans, right next door to St Albans City Station, so it's very easy. If anybody commutes from London, it's probably like 20 minutes, half an hour, something like that on the train. Very easy to get to. We're doing it on a Sunday as well. And I think it's been from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m, something like that, you know. But hopefully we'll expect to. We've sold lots of tickets in advance, which is great. There'll be tickets available at the door because I know a lot of our BFCC guys, you know, like to pay cash. So that'll be available. And this one will be, we're really looking at the dealers. So we've got some really good dealers here. You know, Phil Shear, Classic Home Cinema, DJ Nigel, people like that, Murray Patterson. So hopefully there'll be lots of real film for people to buy there or rummage through, you know. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it. But it's very, and we'll be doing two shows as well. You know, we're lucky to have, some shows being done for us, which would be good. Mark Norton's the gentleman you've met, haven't you?
Yes.
Yeah, but editing Mark Norton a bit sooner, I think. You know, we're lucky to have Mark Norton doing the projecting. So, and we're very lucky. I believe Lee Manor is going to send us some of his new releases down.
That sounds good. And I will link to both the Blackpool Convention and the British Film Collectors Conventions in the show notes so we can find more information about that. But before we wrap up, where can all the people listening here find your book if they want to buy it?
Right. Well, Amazon, at the moment, it's available on various territories. Probably the best way to do it, if you go on to Amazon.com and then look it up.
And I will link to the Amazon pages in the show notes. But before we wrap up, we must mention one more thing, and that is that you, when you are in Blackpool, you will actually be in a Q&A with Adrian Winchester about the book. So if you are interested in the book, anyone that you are listening now are interested in the book and are able to go to Blackpool, I really recommend that you do, so you can see Adrian and Mark talk about the book there.
That sounds good.
If you enjoyed this episode and want to follow us, you can listen to us and subscribe to our podcast using players like Pocket Casts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and YouTube. You can also use any podcast player supporting RSS. Go to our website, hammingprojector.com, to learn how to subscribe. You can also listen to any current and previous episodes on our website without any additional software. If you have any feedback for this episode or a suggestion for a future episode, please send an email to feedback@hammingprojector.com.
And with that, we have reached the end of this episode. A huge thanks to Mark Williams for attending this podcast. And my name is Eivind Mork, and thanks for listening.